encourage you to grab a Bible or a device. Turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1. If you don't have a Bible, use the Bibles in front of you. We want you following along. James chapter 1 or James 2 will be right in that section. Page 870 in those Bibles. And again, we'd encourage you to take those Bibles home with you if you don't have one. Let me just encourage you by way of next week being Pie and Praise. We really want you here for that. Sunday night, I know it's a little bit different this year in that we're going to be in here for the praise instead of in the gym. So everything's going to be done in here. But we're looking forward to it for a number of different reasons. Number one, I feel like we're going to get a taste of what heaven is going to be like because we'll have three different congregations of believers gathered together, worshiping together. I think that's going to be really neat. And so we get an opportunity. Some people from some of the churches are going to join with our worship team and going to worship with us. And so that's going to be great. We're all going to fellowship around the Lord's table together. Several of the men from the other churches will help our men serve you communion, and that will be a special time. You're going to hear testimonies from other people, from other churches of what God's doing in their lives. So it's just going to be a great opportunity to gather together. And listen, since we're the host church, I would like for us to really make a good showing. That would be nice, wouldn't it? So don't let us down. Show up. And number two, in regards to the pies, we're the only church bringing pies, okay? So you're like, that's unfair. Well, they're bringing cider, all right? They're all bringing cider, and I being confident in our church's ability to make pies, volunteered us as the pie maker. And you don't even have to make the pie. Go to a store and buy it, all right? I don't care. Just, we need pies. So make sure you get out there and sign up. James chapter 2 was a passage that we looked at last week. Specifically, we started in verse 14. We worked our way through the end of the chapter. And it's really one of the more difficult passages in the Bible because it talks about faith without works being dead. And we looked at that passage in order that we might answer two questions. We might walk away with an answer to two questions. The first question being very similar to the one that Jason was asking some of his coworkers at his school. And that's about what is it that you really believe about God? Do you believe in God? Do you believe in his son, Jesus Christ? Do you believe in Christ's death, burial, and resurrection? Do you believe in those things? And we said last week, since we're at church, I'm going to assume that a vast majority of us in this room this morning would say, yes, I believe in those things. I believe in God. I believe in his son, Jesus Christ. I believe in his death, burial, and resurrection. That's great. So we know the answer to that, or at least we believe we know the answer to that. But the next question that we said this passage helps us to answer is this: can you prove your belief? Can you prove it? So if someone were to say, do you believe? Yeah, I believe that. Well, then follow that would be, can you prove that? Show me. Show me that you believe it. Prove it. How would we be able to answer that? And that's what James 2 really helped us to understand. I'm going to highlight two verses. Number one would be verse 14. What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith, but he does not have works? James says, can that faith save him? And then drop down to verse 17, where James says, so also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. Genuine belief in God, genuine belief in his son, Jesus Christ, and in his death, burial, and resurrection is proven in all of our lives, according to James, by show me moments. And that's what we kept referring to last week, show me moments. Those are moments where our faith and our lifestyles, our actions intersect, and they should intersect. We should have moments in our life where our faith and our life and our actions, they intersect, and we have these things called show me moments. And these show me moments are the proof that our faith is indeed genuine. Now, it's in light of this truth that James shares with us in chapter 2. We're going to stay in the book of James. And the purpose for staying in the book of James is because over the next couple weeks, we're going to look at some show me moments that we can look at in our own lives or kind of evaluate our own lives to see if they're there. Because if we can find these show me moments in our lives, then hopefully there are ways that you can say, okay, I'm proving my faith. I'm proving my belief that it is genuine. And so we'll consider two show me moments in the book of James, one of them being hinted at the end of chapter 1. So if you're in chapter 2, just jump up to the end of chapter 1, verse 26. And then James is going to deal with this show me moment in great detail in chapter 3. All right? So look at verse 26. If anyone thinks he is religious. All right? So here's the question. James would say, do you believe? Do you believe in God? Do you believe in his son, Jesus Christ, and his death, burial, and resurrection? If you say, yes, I believe in that, then you consider yourself to be religious. You think you're religious. I think I'm religious, right? And so James is saying, if anyone thinks he is religious, but notice this, and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his heart, this person's religion is, what's the last word he uses? It's worthless. So do you believe? Yes, I believe. I believe in God. I believe his son, Jesus Christ. I believe he died. I believe he was buried and he rose again. Great. Do you believe? That's great. Show me moment number one. Show me moment in your life would be this. Do you have a bridled tongue? Do you have a controlled tongue? Uh-oh. Now, some of you may be wondering to yourself, why in the world would James, out of all the different show me moments in life that he could pick, why would he pick the tongue as one of them, especially when he gets done in chapter 2? I mean, he leads it into chapter 2 with that statement. He deals with faith and works in chapter 2, and then he gets into chapter 3, and he immediately starts with the tongue again. What's his deal? Why is he so amped up on the tongue? Why is this on the top of his list? Well, let me give you a few reasons why that might be. The first one, let me share with you by sharing with you some interesting facts. The average person, and let me emphasize average, okay? This is the average. The average person spends 1/5 of their life talking. That's pretty significant. 1/5. If all of our words, and our words now include things like texts, emails, Facebook, messages, any of that stuff, right? Tweets, all of that stuff. They're all words that go out. Anything in social media. If we were to put all of our words into print, the result would be that a single day's worth of words would fill a 50-page book. And in a year's time, the average person's words would fill 132 books of 200 pages each. Now, again, that's the average. So that means some of you basically, in the course of a year, basically wrote 4 children's books. That's it, right? Because you don't talk that much. You have these little 10-page books that your life consists of. Some of you, though, you fill an entire library in a year, right? It's like, wah, right? And so you're out there and your words are flying everywhere. So that's why we say average. So for those of you who basically do 4 children's books, but the rest of you do a library, we meet in the middle and we get those statistics given to us. And so the point that we're trying to make is that we are constantly talking. I don't know about you. I even talk to myself at times. You talk to yourself? I talk to myself. We're constantly talking. We talk to ourselves. We talk to others. We text, we tweet, we email, we Facebook, we do all of these things. And here, listen to me. The reason we do that, the reason we communicate and we do so with words is because we are created by a God and in the image of a God who communicates with us through words. So I'm so thankful that we do that. But we do that because God, we are created in the image of a God who communicates with us through words, and therefore, because we're in his image, we do the same thing. We're individuals who talk. And so one of the reasons a controlled tongue made the list for James of show me moments is because of how much we talk. And in light of the fact that we talk a lot, sometimes our talking can get us into trouble, right? Just ask the guy who talked about the Starbucks cups, right? I guarantee you, and he did, he then posted another video talking about, you know, a little bit of regret posting that video. Who cares, right? That's what I came up with. Who cares? Starbucks is not Christian owned. So don't have a fit about it. And please don't go to a Starbucks and say your name is Merry Christmas, all right? It's the dumbest, it's dumb, all right? Again, my mouth is getting me into trouble, but we talk a lot, and so it's a show me moment. And James, let me move on. A second reason this controlling our tongue made the list is because of how sin has affected communication. Sin has had an effect on us as communicating creatures. As with the case in everything that God created communication in our lives as being perfect, but sin has corrupted that communication. Let me just share with you a couple of verses that Solomon in the book of Proverbs, as he talks about our communication, how badly sin has affected it. And you can't get much worse than this. All right, the first one being Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Listen, before sin came on the scene, guess what the only power was in the tongue? Only life. Wouldn't that be awesome? Before sin came on the scene, this verse would just say, life is in the power of the tongue. But now, because of sin, it says both death and life are in the power of the tongue. Another passage in Proverbs chapter 12. There is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts. That sounds like fun, right? But the tongue of the wise brings healing. Sin has corrupted our communication so that now it has the power to wound and it has the power to kill. It has the power to wound and kill hopes and dreams in people. It has the power to wound and kill reputations and a person's view of themselves. It has the power to wound and kill churches and homes and businesses. It has the power to wound and kill unity and friendships. It can do all of that. And many of us, if not all of us, have been on the receiving end of the wounding and of the killing. And something that, to be honest with you, that is something that we are ill prepared to handle. The wounding and killing effects of words and communication. Right? What were we taught as kids growing up? What was the little saying that we were taught? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Again, dumb. Really? Then why is it, if that saying is so true, then why is it that hundreds of people every year kill themselves because of people's communication towards them? The things that they say, the mean things that are said to them, how things are said consistently and constantly in their life, belittling them. Tearing them down to the point where they can't handle it anymore. Sticks and stones, really? Words can't hurt us? They really can. And we don't know how to handle that at times. In light of that, I'm sad to say that I'm pretty sure all of us have used our tongues as the weapon of choice and have been on the giving end of the wounding and the killing. And it's in light of that danger that James puts the tongue on really the top of his show me list. You believe? You say you believe? You say you're a religious person? Great, show me. Show me your tongue. Show me the control of your tongue. The third reason a controlled tongue made this show me list, and this is where James chapter 3 is going to come into detail, is this. It's only God's presence in our lives that can control the power of the tongue. It's only God's presence that can do this. So let me show you where this is communicated. James chapter 3, verse 2, and we're going to read down through verses 2 through 12, and then we'll come back and deal with it a little bit. Notice, for we all stumble in many ways, and if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man. He's able also to bridle his whole body. If we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire, and the tongue is a fire. It is a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and reptile and bird of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil. It is full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father. With it we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessings and cursings. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. He's talking to believers here, or those who are claiming to be believers. From the same mouth come blessing and cursings. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. Can I be really honest with you? When I approach this text, for years as I approach this text, I got to be honest, I put far too much credit or weight on myself when it came to me and the control of my tongue. I read this passage and I looked at this passage and the application that I took away from it was I had to do a lot better at what I and my efforts at controlling my tongue. I had a much greater role to play. And really, that was foolish thinking in light of what James shares in these verses. And so what I want us to do is look a little more closely at what James does share in these verses so that we can walk away with a better understanding of what James is saying, so that we can walk away with a better understanding of what our role is. And so what we're going to do in these verses is we're going to notice two things that James does. Number one, he's going to illustrate for us in three different ways the incredible power of the tongue and what the tongue can do with three illustrations. And then after that, he's also going to share with us how the only one that can really control that power or can bring such incredible power under control is God, and how he does that, how we don't stand a chance. It's only through God. So let's consider the first illustration here in verses 2-5, where James says, we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man. Here's where the illustration starts. He's able also to bridle his own body. If we put a bit into the mouth of a horse so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so large and driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. Using the illustration of a bit in a horse's mouth, the rudder on a ship, the first thing that James is trying to help us to understand is that the tongue has incredible power to control and to direct, our lives in different ways. His illustrations are not groundbreaking to any of us. We all know what they are, right? We all know if you put a bit in a horse's mouth, if that bit and the reins that are connected to that bit are in strong hands, then that person can direct that horse and do with that horse whatever it is that they want to. That horse becomes useful for transportation, moving people, pulling wagons and carts and plowing fields. It can do a number of different things, but you need the bit. And you need that bit to be in strong hands. Now, here's the thing. I don't know how many of you ride horses or have ridden a horse. There are times in which that bit and that horse will meet up with contrary forces of different kinds, right? I mean, there are days where you're just riding along. If you ride a horse, you're riding along. You have the reins in your hands. Things are all great, but occasionally certain things can happen. One would be the contrary force of the fact that the horse just naturally decides he's going to kind of freak out a little bit, right? Because he's still wild at heart at times. And so that bit of contrary force all of a sudden takes that bit in the horse's mouth and it begins to test how much control someone will have over that horse. Or if someone or something comes along and spooks the horse, you better have very strong hands on those reins. Otherwise, things are out of control. James wants us to know that our tongues are like a bit in a horse's mouth or a rudder on a ship. Same thing with a rudder on a ship. Small little thing compared to the overall size of the boat. If the rudder is in the hands of someone who's strong and knows what they're doing, they can direct that ship to do whatever it is they want to. That powerful ship becomes very useful for transportation, for hauling of cargo, so on and so forth. But there's contrary forces that can hit that ship. Winds and waves and storms and currents. And that's when you better have a very strong handle on that rudder. You need strong hands on that rudder or else it will get out of control. Our tongues are like a bit. Our tongues are like a rudder. Therefore, they can control the whole body. And the idea is that if we can bring the tongue under control, under someone's strong hand so that it is God-honoring, then surely the rest of our bodies can be controlled and used in God-honoring ways. However, like the bit in a horse's mouth and a rudder on a ship, our tongues meet contrary forces at times, right? And here's where we get into trouble. Again, we can think, yeah, I can control the bit of my tongue. You know, you think of riding a horse. I mean, how hard is it? You just hang on to the reins, right? Until the contrary force hits. Or, I mean, how hard is it to direct a boat with a little rudder? I mean, how hard could that be? You just hang on until you face a contrary force. And the same thing happens with our tongue. Here we are. We think we have a handle on our tongue. And then our sin nature hits our tongue sometimes. And that's that part of us that just so wants to go crazy with our tongues and to let people have it and to tell people off and to use our tongues in sinful, hurtful, destructive ways. Or you might face the contrary force of different circumstances that come into your life that can easily lead your tongue to be out of control. A fight with a spouse, right? A circumstance that comes into your life. Oh, I have control over my tongue. Yeah, let's test it. Let's see how you do. Contrary force, fight with your spouse. Kids are going crazy all around you one day, right? Let's test your control. Let's test it when your coworker gets all in your face about something, or a teammate gets all in your face about. Let's see how controlled you really have when the circumstances come into your life, or as I hinted at, or people. Oh man, people can test the control that you think you have over your tongue. In light of those contrary forces that our tongues have to deal with, it needs a very strong hand to control it. And for years, I thought my hands had to be the ones that controlled my tongue. I just had to be strong enough. I had to be disciplined enough. I had to do the work. I had to watch myself. I had to do this. I had to do that. The problem is I have proven time and time again that my hand is not strong enough. I need a stronger hand. Do you? I need the hand of God in my life. I need the hand of God controlling the bit. I need the hand of God to be controlling the rudder, not me. Because I'm not strong enough. The contrary forces hit, and I'm out of control. Only God is strong enough to rein in the controlling power of our tongues, which is why James includes it on a show me list. Only God is strong enough. There's no ability to control our tongues apart from God in our lives. And God becomes a part of our lives when there is true faith, genuine faith on our part. So if there's genuine faith, then God is in our life. That should lead to a controlled tongue. Therefore, a controlled tongue is a show me moment. I have God in my life. So how reined in and how controlled is your tongue? Let's keep going. Verse 5, second illustration, second part of verse 5. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire. It's a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. Yeesh. Using the illustration of fire, James now moves on in these verses to let us know that our tongues have the power to burn and to destroy. Burn and destroy. Our words set fires. Our words start fires. King David, he talks about the fire-starting ability of our tongues. Notice this passage that he writes. He says, I'm going to guard my ways so that I may not sin with my tongue. Now, why did he write that? Because I think he understood what happened at another time. A couple verses later, he says this, my heart became hot within me, right? That happened to anybody where your heart becomes really hot within you? You can start feeling it. You know you're starting to get a little burned about something. And then he says, the fire burned. And it got hotter and hotter and hotter. And then he says, then I spoke with my tongue. Now here's what I want you to think with me about. Here's the question. If his heart was hot within him, and as he mused, fire was burning, when he finally spoke, what kind of words do you think came out? Fiery words, right? And listen, if your heart is burning within you, and we're not talking heartburn here. We're talking like you're just mad, right? You're really hot about something. And the more you think about it, the more ticked off you get. And then finally you get a chance to say something, right? What comes out? Fiery words, man. It's like those guys with those giant blow torches, right? It's kind of what comes out. According to James, the reason our tongues start fires is because they themselves are set on fire by hell. Which tells us that our tongues can be used as one of Satan's tools, fulfilling hell's purpose of destruction and burning. So it burns homes, it destroys relationships, it burns churches, reputations, and so on. And here's what I've noticed. All it takes is one little comment here and one little jab there, and the fire is started. It's just a spark at first, and that's all it needs to be, but that's where it starts. One little comment, one little jab, right? If you're married, you know that, right? You know that. You know exactly what little comment you need to make. I know what little comment I could make. I try not to make them, right? You know. It just takes one look. And listen, you can look at it and say, it's just a small little fire. It's not going to hurt much. But here's the thing. James wants us to pay very close attention, because if our tongues start fires, then we need to understand that fires have just this inherent danger. And let me just share with you a couple of fire's inherent dangers. Number one, fire has an amazing and unique capacity to reproduce itself in almost unlimited ways, so long as it has fuel to keep it burning. In other words, fire feeds itself, right? So all you need to do is start a small little fire, a small little spark, but then fire has a tendency, as long as it has fuel to keep it burning, it will grow, and it will grow quickly. And according to James, the fire that the tongue can start has a world, notice if you look at this passage, it has a world of unrighteousness to keep dumping fuel on the fire. So this world of unrighteousness, or this world of iniquity that some of your Bibles might call it, that's basically this world's way of thinking and acting. When you really get upset or heated with someone, it's how you think and how you respond. And so let's say you, in a conversation, say the one little thing or make the one little jab to start the fire. The world of unrighteousness begins to just dump fuel on that, because the world of unrighteousness would be things like this: feelings of resentment and bitterness and hatred and anger and revenge. And so that begins to just build the fire even more, so that now your one little statement then becomes enhanced by all of those feelings growing in someone else, and then they in turn respond. And all of a sudden now you have this massive blaze set on fire by one of your little comments that you thought, oh, this isn't going to do any harm. And before you know it, things are out of control, because there's a world of iniquity just dumping fuel on it. And then they say something in return, and guess what? Now all of that world of iniquity that still is in me sometimes, that bitterness and resentment and that anger and that hatred and that desire for revenge, that all starts building up in me. And now I say something in return. And before long, we're just firing back and forth. And we're burning things down all around us. Another inherent danger of fire is how much it can defile and damage even without burning something. Right? With any fire, there are other dangers than just the flames. What other dangers come with fire? Number one would be the heat itself. It can just melt stuff. It doesn't necessarily have to burn it. It can melt it. You have smoke damage, right? So you have all these things. And if you look at James says fire has this ability to defile us. Maybe not completely destroy us, but to defile us, to stain us. The heat and smoke from a fire caused by our tongues can easily defile a relationship, can defile a home, can defile a church. It doesn't mean that these things become completely destroyed, but it means that they are harmed in some way. They're defiled in some way, and there's some damage done. So in light of the tongue's power to start fires, to burn and destroy, it becomes imperative that the blaze of our tongue is kept under control so that it does not spread and cause damage. And again, for years, I thought I had to be the one that kept the blaze of my tongue under control. Oh man, you know, I read this verse, how great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. My tongue's a small fire. I got to keep it under control. Watch what I say all the time. Oh, be careful, little tongue, what you say, right? Again, if you didn't grow up in the church, you never sang that song. I sang that song. And so, oh, okay, be careful, little tongue, what I say. Always be careful, be careful, be careful, be careful. I began to take on the motto of Smokey the Bandit, right? Which is what? Only what? Only you can prevent forest fires, right? That was my philosophy. Scott, only you. Can stop the fire of your tongue from spreading. It's not Smokey the Bear. Smokey the Bandit's a movie. Never saw that movie. I promise. That's with Burt Reynolds, right? Yeah, right? Yeah. I never saw it. I swear I never saw it. Smokey the Bear. So I took that motto on. The problem is that motto is not true when it comes to the fire of our tongues. You see, I'm pretty much powerless to prevent fires with my tongue. I need something else. I need someone else to keep the fire of my tongue in check. And that something else is God. And that, again, is why James includes this on his show me moments, on his list of show me moments. There is no ability to prevent fires from being started from my tongue apart from God in my life. And God becomes a part of my life through genuine and true faith. And if there's true faith and I have God in my life, then a controlled fiery tongue proves that I have God in my life. And it's a show me moment. So what is the fire damage caused by the tongue in your life like? Is it raging? Is it spreading? Is it out of control? Or is it under control? Which one is it? We got to keep motoring along. Verse number 7, the last illustration here. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. Anyone here ever been to like one of those safari parks where you drive through in your vehicle and you watch animals? Any of you do that? Okay, good. If you've ever done that, you've probably seen signs that say, do not get out of your car, right? Keep your windows rolled up, wherever, depending on what kind of park you're going through and what kind of animals you're looking at. They don't want you walking around with the animals because these animals are somewhat in their natural habitat. They haven't been trained at all, right? But if you go to a place like the circus, which I think the circus has been in town this week, if you go to the circus, you see several of these same animals up close and personal. And the reason for that is because these animals have been tamed. They have been trained, right? And they do all sorts of neat tricks, and human beings have been able to teach them to do some amazing things. I don't think any of us need to be convinced of how wild and how out of control our tongues can be at times. And it's because of that wild nature of our tongues that it can cause great damage and destruction. It just gets out of control very quickly. But when tamed, the tongue is very beautiful. The tongue can do very useful things. The tongue can be very helpful. We can sing praises to God. We can come alongside and comfort others. We can pray for others. We can pray with others. The tongue is a beautiful thing when under control and tamed. But when out of control, it causes so much damage. The problem is that according to James, how tameable is our tongue? How tameable is it? Look at verse 8. It's on the screen. No human being can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil full of deadly poison. I got to tell you, I read that verse, and this is why my whole thinking has been blown out of the water. This verse is really causes me great concern. It's discouraging to me. It's telling me that I have no hope to bring my wild and dangerous tongue under control. But that doesn't mean that taming my tongue is a hopeless situation. And it's not hopeless because notice in that verse, who cannot tame the tongue, according to that verse? No what? No human being can tame the tongue. But that doesn't say God can't tame it, right? And that's where my thinking began to shift. Okay, if I look at that verse and I walk away absolutely hopeless, I can't tame my tongue. You're right. I can't. God can. We need the power of God in our lives. Human beings, we've been able to tame and train a lot of different strong and powerful animals. Yet when it comes to the tongue, there's too much power for us. And so we need the power of God, which is why James includes a controlled tongue on his list of show me moments. When God is a part of our lives, there's power to control our tongues. And God is a part of our lives as a result of genuine faith. And so a controlled tongue is a show me moment that our faith is genuine. So how tamed is your tongue? Is it wild? Is it out of control? Does it cause people in your life to be afraid to be around you because you're like some wild animal? Or is it under control and useful and helpful to those around you? Listen, church, if we walk away from this passage this morning thinking to ourselves that we just need to discipline ourselves better, we need to try harder, we need to do some things differently in order to bring our tongues under control, let me just tell you a couple things that will happen. Number one, we will miss the main point of this passage. And number two, you will become very discouraged and very disappointed because you will find yourself failing time and time and time and time again to control your tongue. You can't do it. It's just too wild. It's too out of control. Sin has corrupted our tongues and our communication, giving it the power to control, to burn, to destroy, to maim, and to kill. And sin has made it so that we cannot change the corruption of our tongues on our own. We need God in our lives. And the only way we have God in our lives is through genuine, saving faith. And so some of you, you're here this morning, and you know beyond a shadow of doubt, my tongue's out of control. Just ask anybody around me. They would tell you, my tongue is consistently out of control. And maybe you walked in here this morning thinking to yourself, you didn't know I was going to even talk about this, but throughout the morning you've been thinking, you know what, there is no hope for me to control my tongue. I've been this way all my life. I cannot change. You're right, you cannot change apart from God. That's what James would tell you. No human being can tame the tongue, only God can. So here's what I would encourage your response today would be this. Maybe for the first time, because you've never done this in the past, maybe for the first time, you need to begin a real relationship with God through faith in Jesus Christ, through belief in Jesus Christ, where you believe that he's the Son of God, you believe that he died for your sins, you believe that he rose 3 days later from his crucifixion and his death, proving himself more powerful than what causes death, that sin, and proving himself more powerful than the power of your tongue. You believe in those things, you establish a relationship with him, and then you allow his power to control your tongue. Some of you, you claim to be a believer. You claim to be religious. You're like James chapter 1, verse 26. If anyone thinks he is religious, but the pattern of your life proves that you do not bridle your tongue, James says you're deceiving your heart and your religion is worthless. And so you may need to go back and really evaluate your claim of belief and make sure it's real. Now, in all of this, this does not mean that the sin-corrupted, wild nature of our tongue will never rear its ugly head in our lives. It's going to happen from time to time. And it's going to happen, listen, not because God's power is no longer in our lives, but rather it's because we didn't do our part in keeping the power of God actively working in our lives. We're not doing our part. So what is our part? Let me quickly share with you what our part is by sharing with you a couple different verses. One of them is found in Matthew, I believe, where Christ tells us this. But what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart. All right? So the things that we say, the things that come out of our mouth starts here. They're connected. Therefore, guess where the power of God is actively working in your life in order to control the power of your tongue? It's working in your heart. That's where it all starts. Now, based on that, here's where your role is. Here's where our part is. In order to keep the power of God working in our lives to control our tongues, here's what we need to do. Keep your heart with all vigilance or diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Your responsibility, my responsibility, in making sure God's power in our life is working in order to keep our tongues under control is to keep our hearts or to guard our hearts. That's another word for keep. We're to be a guard over our hearts because that's where God's power is most at work to control our tongues. So what is it that we should be guarding our hearts from? Well, let me just challenge you. There's a couple things we need to be guarding our hearts from. Number one, we need to be guarding our hearts from allowing someone or something else other than God to be the thing that is, to be the one that is sitting on the throne of our hearts and ruling our hearts. Listen, when there are fiery, hurtful, damaging, deadly things flowing out of our tongues, then most likely, it is because something other than God and his power is ruling our hearts. Let me give you some examples. Let's say success at your workplace is ruling your heart. And someone at your workplace begins to be getting moved up the ladder quicker than you. And they seem to be doing better than you. And they're being recognized for things that really they shouldn't be recognized for. And they aren't even working as hard as you, but they're getting promoted and you're not. Now listen, if being promoted in your workplace, success in your workplace is on the throne of your heart and God is not, guess what you will begin to do with your tongue towards that worker? You're going to tear him down. You're going to begin to talk bad about them. You're going to start slandering them. You're going to do whatever you need to do with your tongue in order to make sure that person doesn't get the promotion that you think you deserve instead of him or her, right? Because the wrong thing is on your heart. Let's say that comfort and ease is on the throne of your heart. I want to be comfortable. I want to have a evening of rest. I had a long day today at work. I want rest tonight. And you come home and immediately your kids are crazy. And they're bouncing all over the place and they're fighting and they're yelling and they're carrying on. And when that happens, what comes out of your mouth at that moment usually reflects that you have something wrong on your heart because it's like this. Would you kids just shut up? Why is that? Why do I fly off the handle instead of saying, hey, guys, would you just come here for a minute? Can we talk about some things? Can we sit down and really talk about what is going on right now? Why do we lose it? Because the wrong thing is on our hearts, is ruling our hearts. It's my comfort. I want ease, and they're messing up my ease, so I'm going to let them know it with my mouth. Let's say some particular individual other than God is ruling in your heart, and that particular individual disappoints you, hurts you, sins against you, does something to you, and guess what? If they are higher in your heart than God, then you will quickly use your tongue against that person in so many different ways. You will say bitter things towards them. You will say wrong things about them. You will talk about them to other people, but you will do a number of things because God is not on the throne of your heart. So guard your heart. Keep God number one. And if God is the thing that you are worshiping primarily in your life, then he's going to control your speech so that it's under his will because you want to please God. And if your desire is to please God, then he's going to control your tongue to be in his will. The second thing you need to guard your heart from is ungodly things. Quite frankly, some of us short-circuit the power of God working in our lives because we just allow so many ungodly things into our lives. Instead of consistently renewing our minds with the word of God, we flood our minds and our hearts with ungodly and worldly things, which we can only do for so long before we overload our hearts and we short circuit God. And listen, then all of a sudden the pressures of life begin to build and they begin to squeeze us. And instead of the power of God being able to overcome that, what really is in our hearts at that moment in time, all that garbage that you've put in is going to come flowing out. Because out of the heart flows the issues of life. So guard our hearts. That's our role. That's our responsibility. God's power is what keeps our tongues under control. Our responsibility is to guard our hearts. How are you doing at that? Listen, it's out of the overflow of the heart that the mouth speaks. And since we speak so much in our lives, let's be careful to guard our hearts. And let's be careful to guard our hearts because lives, homes, relationships, reputations, businesses, churches, and the list can go on. They're all on the line. So do you believe? Do you believe? Great, show me. What's your tongue like? Is it under control? God, thank you for this passage of Scripture. And it's tough because, again, it causes us to evaluate our heart. Some of us, we claim to be religious, but yet our tongues are not bridled. Our tongues are not under control. And that maybe, if it's a consistent pattern in our life, if it's what we see time and time and time again, it may be because we don't truly believe. And so, God, I pray that you would help us to be honest with ourselves enough to recognize that and enough to take care of that this morning. But the other end may be we truly do believe, but we haven't been doing our part. We've been short-circuiting your power in our lives, and we've been doing that because we haven't done a very good job at guarding our hearts. We've let other things rule our hearts and our lives other than you, and we've filled our hearts with so many ungodly things that you just can't work the way you intend to work. God, there's so much damage that our tongues can do. So I pray that we would walk away from here saying, okay, we say we believe, so if we say we believe, then we're going to show others by a controlled tongue because you're in control. And God, as other people see that, they're going to wonder, what in the world? Why? How can you do that? How can we be so different? And that gives us opportunity to be bold and say, it's not me. It's not me. No human being can tame the tongue. It's God. It's you. God, thank you for being with us this morning. I pray that you would be with us as we leave and seek to apply these things to our hearts. In Christ's name, amen.